Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell. It's time for another Americans in Action episode. We're going to be talking U.S. roster, specifically concerns about the upcoming U.S. roster, concerns about the USMNT as a whole. We're going to start off anxious and try to reduce some of that anxiety. With me today to hopefully reduce some of that anxiety are two gentlemen who are going to help me get to the bottom of two very important questions. This may sound like a joke, Joe Lowry, but when you write out the position that Anthony Robinson plays, how many words do you use? Like, how many individual words do you use to write out his position?
I would use two words to write out left and back. That's how I would do it, Taylor Rockwell.
Okay. But if you were to go with the more proper formal position, is that one word or two?
I would use one word to write out fullback. Don't ask why. I don't get it. Why? I don't know why I do what I do.
And what about center back? Is that one word or two?
No. See, Taylor, that's two words. Why? Okay. I don't know, but it is.
Graham Ruthven, same question. Yeah. So for Virgil van Dijk's position, is that one word or two for you?
Two. All two, I think, is my answer. Yeah, just keep it nice and
wrong.
Simple.
Spelled wrong, I would add.
Oh, yeah, because they do that weird RE thing that doesn't make any sense. But I wondered that because, yeah, in the group chat today, Graham wrote out fullback as two words. And whenever I write center back as one word, Google tells me that that is not a word. So now I'm wondering if it is two distinct words that I've just been writing it wrong the whole time. But, Joe, I'm happy to hear that you also write it wrong, at least one of them wrong, according to Graham.
Yeah, I've just been peer pressured and bullied by Google and autocorrect into doing it that way. I was trying to think, wait, why do I actually do that? And I've done it for as long as I can remember. But it is just the peer pressure of seeing that red squiggle underneath my word. I don't want to see that. Nobody wants to see that. So I got to fix it.
I get peer pressure from Google when we do our notes before we record, because when you guys have done your notes before me, it'll pick up the regional dialect.
Oh, yeah.
And then when I spell something that it views as incorrect, it'll say to me, do you want to spell it in the American way? And I go, no, I don't want to spell it in the American way. I want to spell it the right way, the Queen's English.
Does it ask you that if you like right click on it, will it say, did you want to write this as an American?
Yes, 100% it says that.
Does
yeah.
it say, howdy y'all, did you mean? And then it just keeps going.
Yeah, it's the old Microsoft Word paperclip you used to get, but
yeah,
with like
Clippy.
A cowboy hat and, or just dressed as Ryan Bailey with a visor and New Balance trainers and dad jeans.
Yeah, yeah.
Dad jeans, yeah, that's the new trend, right? It's dad jeans, it's New Balance sneakers, and it's an old soccer top, and you've got the look right there. So yeah, that's Ryan Bailey, and I'm glad to see Clippy has adopted it as well. I'm glad we're off to a fairly lighthearted start, because as I said, we've got this roster coming up. We've got two friendlies at the beginning of June. Then there's two Nations League games. So we've got, four games in about a 13-day period. So we're going to see a lot of the USMNT, which means hopefully we will get some answers to some questions. And that is the purpose of today's episode, is to talk out some of those sort of burning issues as we see them with the U.S. men's national team. We have each come up with five questions or five concerns that we want to talk about. We want to find some answers to. And either we'll talk out some answers here, or we're hoping that Greg Berhalter will maybe bring in some players that might help us solve those concerns or give us some more depth or have another potential starter. That is about how I would lay it out. Joe, Graham, anything else to add on that one?
I don't think so. These are things that we're hoping are resolved in June, because as Greg Berhalter has said, this window, this June window with the four games and the camp leading up to it, is kind of the last tryout for a lot of these players, because the September window is the only international break after this one before the World Cup. That window is so close to November that he's likely not going to experiment a whole lot by then. I think Berhalter said something to the effect of, we'll likely have an unofficial roster picked by September, at least most of it. That's me heavily paraphrasing, but the idea is consistent with what he said. So this is largely the last chance for players to break in, for really anybody on the fringes to try and make their case. Now, the fringes got a little bit wider with Miles Robinson's injury over the weekend. We'll talk more about that later on, I'm sure. But this is kind of the last trial period. Like, and it's not even that big of a trial period. It is mostly refining at this point, and it's certainly refining in September as well.
Graham, I since Joe has covered that one, what I will say is I feel like sort of a jerk already because this is a grass is greener situation. Here we are talking about concerns about the USMNT and how they'll look at Qatar. For you and Scotland, would you prefer to be in this position, I'm assuming, of worrying about roster options as opposed to whether or not you'll be there at all?
Yes, absolutely. I'd rather be in this position. I talk through gritted teeth whenever we discuss your apparent lack of number nines, despite having about 10 of them when we've not even punched our ticket to Qatar yet. But hopefully within the next month and the next 3 weeks, 3 to 4 weeks, we will find out whether we are going to be in that group with England and the USA.
Here's my pledge. As those games get closer, as we know more about the Scotland roster and everything else as things develop, let's make sure to cover those so that Graham has an outlet to talk about those games, those potential frustrations. And then also let's make sure that Ryan Bailey is not on those episodes so that it doesn't compound for you. Is that a pledge we can go with, Graham?
Yes, that right. Sounds like a good deal.
Perfect.
Let's agree to that.
Perfect.
Particularly right. The no Ryan Bailey part.
I had a feeling. Ryan, if you're listening, we love you, or at least one of your co-hosts does. Joe, let's go to you for your first sort of question or concern about the USMNT.
Okay, so I just mentioned it, so let's just get into it.
The
first question I have is, who is going to start next to Walker Zimmerman? This hadn't been a question for quite some time, ever since the Gold Cup. I mean, in the past, I should say, the question was actually completely different. It was really who was going to start next to Miles Robinson after the Gold Cup, and we thought it might be John Brooks, and he's been banished to the Shadow Realm, so it's not John Brooks, and all of a sudden it was Walker Zimmerman midway through World Cup qualifying, and those two, Robinson and Zimmerman, had locked up those spots as far as I was concerned. Maybe Robinson slightly less than Zimmerman after their relative performances in World Cup qualifying, but they were largely excellent, playing next to each other in the middle of that four-man back line. Miles Robinson is out for quite some time. He ruptured his Achilles in the first half against the Chicago Fire over the weekend. He was clearly frustrated. He punched the field, was stretchered off. You could see that he already knew that something major had happened on his left leg down by his ankle. And so he's going to be out likely past the World Cup. There is a slight chance that he could be back in time. I personally don't see any way that that happens, even if he recovers in time, which is very unlikely but not impossible. Is Berhalter really going to toss him back in after not being involved in either June or the September international windows? It just doesn't feel likely. So the question now that's arisen for Berhalter, and I think we're going to see at least partially addressed, or we're going to see Berhalter attempt to address it in June, is who starts in the middle of that back line next to Walker Zimmerman, because it's not going to be Miles Robinson.
And it's a pretty big question, and is, I think, compounded by being one that we didn't think we would have to deal with, as you said, Joe. And I'm with you that Miles Robinson, given the severity of that injury, it's not really one you can rush back from. It's not one that even if he does come back, will have the fitness. So I think we can kind of operate under the assumption that it will not be Miles Robinson, which does make me sad, and I'm sure makes him even more sad than me. Do you have thoughts on who you might like to be given an opportunity this summer, Joe?
Yeah, there's a few players that I think are all kind of close together in my estimations, and I'd be interested in seeing any number of them. Chris Richards is certainly one of them. He's been out with Hoffenheim for a little while now, dealing with a leg injury. Berhalter mentioned in a recent interview that he did that he should be back in time, or at least it's possible that he's back and involved in that June camp. So we could see Chris Richards. Another couple of options I'm interested in, CCV is probably the biggest one. Graham, I've bought into the CCV propaganda.
Yes.
It's not really propaganda, though, and we've talked about this. There are questions about Cameron Carter-Vickers and his level, and there's questions about, you know, is he getting consistent enough reps against good teams? And I think the answer to that is probably no. But he has raised his game. It's pretty clear to see that he's become a more well-rounded player playing under Postecoglou at Celtic, and that intrigues me. He has a little bit of that defensive mobility, not the same level. He's not the same level of athlete as Miles Robinson, but so few center backs are. CCV has some of that, but then he also has, I think, better distribution than Miles Robinson. So there could be some benefit to putting someone like CCV or even Chris Richards, who I think is better with the ball at his feet but slightly less mobile, involved in getting those players in. Aaron Long, Eric Palmer-Brown are options. Mark McKenzie, I guess, is an option. Matt Miazga, same. I'm not as high on those two players at this point from what we've seen of them at club, at the club level, and then with the national team as well. But CCV, Chris Richards, Eric Palmer Brown, Aaron Long's another one who could be in there. He just has recovered over the last few months and then towards the end of 2021 from this exact same injury that Miles Robinson suffered. So that's, it's an interesting storyline there to see if Long can get all the way back in. He had a couple of appearances in the March window of World Cup qualifying. But it's kind of just a cluster at this point in my mind. Graham, do you disagree? Do you think there's any one of those names that really stands out more than the rest?
Slightly, yeah. I think if he can get fit and can prove he's fit over the next few months, I think for me, Richards is probably the front runner just because he has held that role before. There's some existing chemistry with Zimmerman. I think they started together against El Salvador in January. And in terms of playing as that left-sided centre-back, I think that is Richards' best position. And one of the concerns I have with CCV coming into this team as a first-team starter, I definitely think he should be in the roster, and I'm excited to see how he's going to fare in this camp, because Berhalter's already said he is going to get a call-up to the summer camp for the friendlies and the Nations League games. I am excited to see how he gets on, but for Celtic, he has played as the right-sided centre-back. So really, in previous podcasts, I've said he would be better as a depth option behind Zimmerman. I'm not saying he can't play as a left-sided centre-back, but he hasn't played a whole bunch there this season. I think Chris Richards for the USMNT has played there. So if he can get fit, I think Richards maybe gets the first shot. And that's the thing about the situation that the USMNT is in now with this centre-back pairing. They can't really mess around with a lot of different options, and I think if one player goes in for a game and has a good game alongside Zimmerman, that might be enough for them to nail down that position. I don't think Berhalter's going to run through four, five, six different options, maybe two or three. But if one of those players impresses early on, then I think the position is theirs, and if Chris Richards is fit, I think he might be the first in line to get that opportunity.
Graham, to your final point there, I think that is a pretty astute one about the, like, we have so many positions where we could experiment, we could try different things, but if you're experimenting everywhere, it makes it really hard to kind of find solid answers. And that's why one player that I had thought about as being a potential left center back, it might be too much for him, is Tim Ream. And that might make some people roll their eyes. Some people might be frustrated by that one, but we're talking about a guy who started, I believe, 46 of 46 games for Fulham as they won the championship this season. They got promoted to the Premier League. And that was a Fulham team that scored a ton of goals. They scored over 100 goals. Not bad. That's like some FIFA numbers. But only 43 against, third best defense in the league. So it wasn't just that they were outscoring everybody, even though they were doing a lot of that. And this was with Tim Ream starting as the left-sided center back in a 4-2-3-1. He's got that left foot. And if we started Ream and Zimmerman, we could pair them and no one would ever know who did what because they would look so similar. But that is one where maybe you're not sort of backing him, that if he does have that one good game, maybe that isn't giving you the kind of results you need to know for sure that he's going to be the starter. So maybe that's one where it's a bit too much experimentation, but I wouldn't hate seeing Tim Ream called in. Graham, how would you feel if it was Tim Ream and Matt and Walker Zimmerman, excuse me, in the middle?
So I asked a few weeks ago, you guys in the chat, what's the reason that Tim Ream hasn't been involved in the squad recently, or at least isn't involved in the discussion? And I think you guys kind of came back with a suggestion that just because maybe he's old and playing a number of games in a major tournament, keep in mind at a World Cup, you're playing, what is it, every 4 days you're playing a game? And maybe for a guy of Tim Ream's age, that might be a bit much. But then I would, as devil's advocate, I'd put forward the argument that, well, in the Championship, how many games do they play in a season in the English Championship? It's 8, over 40. Yeah, exactly. And Tim Ream seems to have handled that. So I think it comes down to what does Berhalter want from, what does he look for in the profile of his squad? Has he gone young with the selection because he just thinks these are the best players that he has available? Because it is a very young squad, one of the youngest teams and squads that will be at the World Cup this year. Is that just because those are the best players that he thinks are available? Or is it because he is making a conscious effort to set the US up for future cycles and future tournaments? In which case, maybe he looks beyond Tim Ream and says, look, you are a good enough player to play in this team, but this selection that I'm making for this World Cup, which everything is obviously geared to with this camp that we're having, that's the guiding light, is the World Cup. Maybe he says to Ream, you know, I'm looking a little bit further beyond this World Cup. I'm wanting players who are gaining tournament experience this November, not just to get us as far as possible in this tournament, but to get us really far in 2026 as well. And then obviously Ream isn't really going to be a factor for 26.
No, that's a fair point. And I do think, to your broader question, my sort of assumption has been that he started out with the kind of the core group that he had from MLS because he had that January camp. Then he brings in the veteran players to kind of fill out the ranks. Then he's got his group, his core group. But then you sort of see who can do what well and who can do what better. And it does feel like it's been increasingly young players coming in and pushing out older players or more veteran players. And I do think that's probably because those veteran players are sort of established in what they do and how they want to play. And so I think maybe there's an eye towards the future. And it is like we want to set ourselves up for a multi-cycle situation. But I also think probably Berhalter's looking at the talent available and seeing maybe more depth, more variety to the skill set of younger players. So maybe that means no Tim Ream, but I wouldn't hate him as a depth option. Joe, the other center back who we haven't talked a lot about of late would be John Brooks. And that's one that I think a lot of people remain confused about, myself very much included. And I think part of that is because of the way it's been discussed as like, well, you know, he was injured and then he wasn't quite in the right situation. And it's all been very vague. And I think it will continue to be. Do you have an issue if we don't have John Brooks called into some of these games? Because if we're going to reset, if he is going to be given this opportunity after qualifying that Berhalter had talked about, this would be that time. But I'm still not sure we will. And I'm basically trying to prepare myself for that. Like, okay, so John Brooks is officially out without us really understanding why.
Yeah, I think he's done under Greg Berhalter. Mm-hmm. I mean, Berhalter talked about recently in an interview how he'd rather see someone like CCV over someone like John Brooks because he already knows what John Brooks can do. That just sounds like a way that I would spin. Yeah, I'm not calling up John Brooks, so I'm going to look at somebody else instead.
He's gone.
It just doesn't feel like it's going to happen. And I don't know what happened behind the scenes. Maybe there's reasons for it, but I don't think there's a ton of on-field reasons for it. I guess you can loop Tim Ream and John Brooks in together in that they're both not very mobile defensively. They can defend in the air. They can defend in tight spaces. But Brooks is not the best when you have an opposing attacker driving right at him and he's back on his heels. He's a little clumsy in those situations. He's not a perfect player, and no one is trying to say that he is. Everybody knows that there's weaknesses to John Brooks' game, just like with Tim Ream. But not bringing someone like John Brooks with the passing ability that he has in a tournament where you might end up playing against teams or you might be in situations late in games where you could use a really strong passer and a dominant aerial threat as well. Let's not forget that that's a part of John Brooks's game. So there has to be something else going on here. We don't know what it is. That hasn't changed. I mean, Berhalter hasn't made any moves to bring John Brooks in for a little while now. I would be very surprised if that changed between now and November.
I read a report from France today that Marcelo, not the Marcelo, but another Marcelo, got dropped from the Lyon first team because he was farting in the dressing room and repeatedly and laughing about it. Maybe that's what happened to John Brooks.
It's the only explanation. That's
breaking news from Graham Ruffin. Breaking wind from Graham Ruffin. Joe, so if you were going to maybe see a couple center backs brought into this roster, I would assume we'll see roughly four. Would you be okay with it being Zimmerman, Richards, CCV, and Aaron Long? Or would you like a little more experimentation there?
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I actually do think we'll see more than four. It sounds like Berhalter's toying with using the three at the back shape, at least in camp, if not in any of these games. But we could see it in a couple of these games as well in June. So I would expect maybe five center backs. It could even be up to six if James Sands is involved in this roster, and he can kind of do both the midfield job and the center back job. So I would say Zimmerman, CCV, Richards, Palmer Brown, and Aaron Long would probably be my five. And then maybe Sands gets in there. I kind of doubt it, though.
All right, so that's the center back question discussed. I won't say resolved. Graham, what about you? What's a burning question you've got about the USMNT?
So my concern regards the first choice goalkeeper, and that isn't a particularly new concern because this discussion has been around for a while. But to be honest, I didn't feel it was that much of a pressing issue until fairly recently. Of course, as I said, there's been a lot of discussion about the merits of Turner and Stefan, but both enough were good enough to start for the USMNT. At least that was my view until fairly recently. I guess I haven't really changed my opinion on Turner, but the problem for him is game time. He's not played much these last few months due to injury, and then he's going to Arsenal this summer where he's not going to be first choice. If Bert Leno stays around, he might not even be second choice at Arsenal. Maybe he's not even getting cup games. Then you have Zach Steffen, and You could argue that lack of game time hasn't been an issue for Stefan in Berhalter's eyes, given that he's been second choice at City for years. But I would say that his recent performances for club and country suggest it actually is a problem. He was very shaky for the USMNT in the last window, and then there was the huge mistake for City in the FA Cup semi-final against Liverpool. And if you're looking beyond Stefan and Turner, can you find a reliable goalkeeper who is playing regularly and who would make it worthwhile to make that change at this time? Because obviously, there's no point in changing now. And I think this probably is the last time that you could make a change. I agree with Joe. Once you get to that September window, it's too late. You probably don't want to be changing anything fundamental at that time. So now is probably the time to, if you're going to do it, look at different options. Stefan Fry has been mentioned.
Yes, sir.
I can actually see the merit in that in some respect. He's been brilliant for, well, he's been brilliant for the Sounders for a number of years. He was brilliant for the Sounders in the CONCACAF Champions League. He's experienced, knows the American game. I don't know if that counts for much, but he's not an unfamiliar name to fans. There are some drawbacks with Stefan Fry. You know, the Sounders don't really play out from the back that much. And then there's his age, similar with Tim Ream. It depends what Berhalter's wanting to do with that squad. Maybe you go in a completely different direction than the opposite direction, in fact, and you go and get Gagas Slonina. If he's as good as people seem to think he is, and if there's a chance he's going to Poland, do you get him in now and just trust that he's going to handle it? I think he's got a strong character. He seems like he's handling the pressure in MLS. I know the World Cup is a massive, massive step up, but keep in mind he's 17 years old and he seems to have taken that in his stride. What I will say about making changes with goalkeepers, and maybe I'm showing some ignorance here, please correct me if I am, but I do think it's possible to make quicker changes in goal than in any other position on the pitch. Obviously, that's a sweeping generalisation. It's not the same for every team and every goalkeeper, but I do think goalkeepers are slightly more plug-and-play because of the uniqueness of their position. Yeah. You look at Alisson for Liverpool, who comes in and almost immediately is perfect for that team. Ederson for City, they were immediately in that team and playing well. And in other positions, you have to worry about balance and chemistry. And there is a bit of that with goalkeeper, but I would say largely that comes down to communication over anything tactical. And it's not beyond the realms of possibility that Berhalter could make a goalkeeping change this close to the World Cup and it works out. But I do think this June camp is probably the last chance for him to do that.
Graham, I completely agree. I think this is kind of put up or shut up time. And Berhalter obviously can do whatever he wants, but I think the evidence is pretty clear, and I've been on this train for a while, that there should be a shakeup in the goalkeeping pecking order, the goalkeeper pecking order. There's some pecking order in goal.
There's pecking involved.
Yeah, that's all that matters, Taylor. Yeah, the important stuff. I think Zach Steffen has had too many errors in World Cup qualifying and even before World Cup qualifying to start for this team at the World Cup. I think if he's starting, and I have nothing against Zach Steffen, I think he's a fine goalkeeper, and I think he seems like a good dude. But I think you're hamstrunged. I think you've limited your team if you're using Zach Steffen.
You've hamstrungeded.
Yes.
Taylor,
you're coming in so clutch with the corrections
I'm trying.
Thank you. I think you're making your life harder as a team if Zach Steffen is starting in goal over someone like Matt Turner, maybe over even someone like Ethan Horvath. Maybe there's other names involved as well. I don't have as much concern or I'm not as interested in maybe who that third goalkeeper is. It does seem like Steffen and Turner are both going to be there, barring any sort of injury. But I think this June window is going to be a really telling window for the national team as far as who's getting those minutes, who's playing in these games. Is it split? Does Berhalter see this as a time to maybe give both goalkeepers, Turner and Steffen, some minutes? What's that going to look like? I don't know, but I do think something needs to change.
The way I've understood the goalkeeper position under Berhalter, it's basically been that though we, like media pundits fans, have conversations about who should be the starter, is it Turner, is Steffen challenging, or is Steffen the starter, I think that it has been Steffen as the starter for Greg Berhalter whenever he was healthy. And I think that that is probably still the case. But Joe, I was reading an article at a website, it was called Backheeled. I don't know if you're familiar.
Yeah, I've heard of it.
It was written by Adam Bells, I think was the name. And it was about sort of the issues with it was the USMNT's to-do list, which is a great read. People should check that out. But one of the points he made was about goal or goalkeeper, and it was about expected goals or goals prevented, excuse me. Joe, you're going to have to kind of do some fact support here to clean up if I get things wrong.
Some refinement.
Yeah.
Well, what was it, Graham?
some refinement.
Yes, yes, probably so. As the bull in the china shop tries to explain things, and then Joe comes through and repairs the china. But Stefan was, I believe, 12th out of 13 goalkeepers in World Cup qualifying in terms of goals prevented. My understanding of that is that if you take expected goals conceded minus actual goals conceded, you get goals prevented. A positive number for that would be good. A negative number, not so good. Keylor Navas, the best goalkeeper in CONCACAF with that number, 4.97 goals prevented. Zach Steffen was the second worst, negative 1.46. Matt Turner was sixth, just ahead of Guillermo Ochoa. So there's that. But that, I think, to my mind, Joe, explains the idea that you have long had of maybe Zach Steffen isn't the best shot stopper and isn't going to be that kind of clutch shot stopper if we come up against a team like we did against Belgium the last time we were at a World Cup. First off, have I explained goals prevented somewhat accurately? And second off, does that sort of support your idea that Steffen might not be the shot stopper we might require?
Yes and yes. Taylor, I think you did a great job walking folks through. There's a few different ways, depending on where the data is coming from, of how those stats are labeled. StatsBomb calls it post-shot expected goals, and you can compare those and goals to figure out, okay, relatively, you can get a relatively good idea of how good of a shot stopper different goalkeepers are. That was True Media's basic representation of that same idea of shot stopping and quantifying that. It shows that, yeah, Steffen was a pretty poor shot stopper in World Cup qualifying. And Turner wasn't perfect, right? Let's think back to that Canada game in Hamilton, Ontario. He gets beat by, I think, Kyle Larin early on in that game, and the U.S. goes down 1-0. And he doesn't get his footing right, doesn't get his footwork right, and he doesn't do well on that shot, and Canada goes 1-0 up. Matt Turner's not perfect, but I think we have a large enough sample size, or at least we're close to it, that we can say, yeah, Turner and Steffen are both flawed, but if you're trying to play the odds, and you should be, because that's how this whole game works, then Turner is a better option, and he's going to help you win more games and help you keep more balls out of the back of the net than Zach Steffen. So yeah, that table, which is from Paul Carr, that Bell cited in his article, I think is a really good representation of that.
And so, Graham, that pulls me back to the idea that maybe there should be a little bit of experimentation if this is the kind of final time to do that. And I would really like to see Stefan Fry get given a chance. I think he was rock solid for the Sounders in that CONCACAF Champions League final over both legs. Cemented in my mind that he's a big game performer who rises somewhat literally to the occasion. And if that penalty save had not been overturned, it really would have gone all the way towards putting it over the top. Joe, I don't really know much about Stefan Fry's distribution. That's weird to have Stefan and Stefan Fry. But I think it's worth bringing in somebody who might be that sort of veteran presence that is sometimes needed to just be a calm figure in goal. If you're not quite certain of how you're lining up, or if you feel sort of outgunned, then I can see an argument for having somebody in there who is just kind of reliable and consistent. So Graham, if you were picking like one player to come in and maybe get a game that we haven't seen previously, would it be Fry or would it be Slonina?
Oh, that's tricky. I would go with Fry, I think, because I think there's enough evidence that Slonina's probably going to pick the USA. That seems like the kiss of death, but it feels like he's probably going to pick the US over Poland, I think, to play for, and then you don't have to worry about cap-tying him. I know the friendlies don't cap-tie him anyway, but Fry, yeah, I just feel like there could be a really big upside to bringing in an experienced head at the back for the US, particularly if we're talking about unsettling that central defensive partnership as well, where a bit of experience might be really useful. And I think it's now or never for Stefan Fry. He's 36. He is, would you say that he's at the peak of his powers? He's certainly close to the peak of his powers. He's, you know, there's not going to be many more opportunities. He's been called into a camp, I think, once before in 2017. He's never had a cap. So yeah, I feel like there could be significant upside to getting Stefan Fry in, giving him a game. I think that a lot of the, assuming he doesn't make a howler or a big mistake in that game, I think a lot of the assessment will be one that maybe we can't make. It'll depend a lot on how he fits into the group, whether he comes in as a natural figure and instantly kind of works well within that group, which we know that Berhalter values a lot, given that we've all kind of detected that John Brooks isn't out of the squad because of his footballing ability. So if he comes in and is a good member of that squad, then yeah, I think give him a shot.
There we are. All right, well, we've got two concerns down. We're pretty far into the show at this point, so we'll take a break. We'll come back and try to get through a few more concerns in just a moment.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Welcome back. We've heard one concern from Joe, one concern from Graham. I'll stay on the fence for now. Joe, let's go back to you. What else are you worried about? What else would you like to see experimented with, resolved this summer, whatever it may be?
The next one for me is the question of where is the central midfield depth coming from? And we're seeing now, and we saw it towards the end of World Cup qualifying, that is a relevant question and a relevant concern, because the U.S.'s midfielders, and the key ones especially, in Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, can't stay healthy. Weston McKennie is still out with an injury, although it sounds like he could be involved in June with the U.S., which is great news. But those players are really injury prone. And as we've seen with Miles Robinson, an injury can happen, and it can happen to any one of these guys, and they could end up missing time either all of the World Cup or just time at the World Cup. So Adams and McKennie are injury prone. Moose has missed some time as well. Outside of those three players, I think there's a couple of names that are basically locked in. Kellen Acosta is locked in on that World Cup roster. I don't think there's any way that he's not going to Qatar barring injury. Luca De La Torre, I know that moved pretty fast as a storyline, but I think when you look at the lack of options and those number eight spots behind Musa and McKennie, and I guess Acosta if he is moonlighting there, De La Torre's got to be at the top of that depth list. So I do think he will likely end up in Qatar as well. Beyond those players, though, fellas, where's the depth? Is there a single player outside of those names I just mentioned, Adams, Acosta at the six, most likely, and then Musa, McKennie, and De La Torre at the eights? I don't think we're confident that there's any names etched into this roster outside of those players. Gio Reyna could do the job at the eight, but every time it feels like we're about to see him there, he gets hurt and doesn't have enough miles or minutes ready to go on his legs that he can actually come in and play. So maybe Gio Reyna is that guy, and we don't see a ton of other options in midfield for the U.S. and Qatar. But with the expanded roster, and Berhalter said multiple times that he expects it to be 26, not 23, with that 26-man roster, it feels like there will be at least one, if not two more central midfielders that are in Qatar that we just don't know yet. So maybe that's Georgi Mihailovic. I don't know if Berhalter sees him as an eight or as maybe a left-sided winger. We don't know the answer to that. I'd like to see him in June. Maybe that's Paxton Pomykal, who's been good, fine to good with Dallas, I would say. He's been fine to good with FC Dallas and Nico Estevez. But he has a ton of work in his legs. He goes and buzzes around the field. He's a really energetic guy. That certainly fits the model of what Berhalter wants from his team and how he wants his midfielders to play. So maybe it's those two guys that come in and get looks along with De La Torre, and they get some more run, and Musa does too, and McKennie maybe gets a game, two games as he's coming back from injury. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like, but I think it's time to see some names in those spots at least brought into camp. Even if they don't play a ton, I think it's important that they come into camp so that Berhalter can evaluate them up close and get a better understanding of how they play and how they could potentially fill out this depth chart.
Has there been any chat about, and I'm not going to sit here and pretend this is a player that I've watched a lot or a player that I'd even really heard of before I started to do my research, but Alan Sonora was a player that kept on coming up in my research. He's 23, is playing for Independiente in South America, and he's got 3 goals in his last 5 games. Hasn't been recognized, American born, hasn't been recognized at any youth level for America, and obviously hasn't had a senior cap, and is a midfield playmaker, which seems like he's playing at a pretty high level for someone that generally doesn't seem to be in the discussion, but there is an underlying Twitter discussion about this guy that is interesting to me.
Yeah, I haven't seen much about Sonora. I haven't watched a ton of his footage either, just because he hasn't been in the picture. But Graham, I think he's another one who could fit in this group of maybes, right? Maybe it's Georgie, maybe it's Pomykal, maybe it's a wild card coming from either South America or someone else coming from MLS or Europe. There's just a big old question mark for me after the first few players, and I wouldn't be shocked if it's really any of the guys that we mentioned, maybe even a couple that we haven't.
I'm still confused why Alan Senora has never gotten any looks at any level, because his brother has played for the U-17s and the U-20s. So you would assume that they would be on the radar. They would have some connections there. Maybe that's one we'll have to watch a bit more footage on, Graham, and see if we think he should be in there, or if he's not in there, why he might not be in there. Are there other central midfield options, Graham, that you think we could see or would like to see?
I think Joe kind of pretty much covered on Paxton Pomacall. I mean, this whole segment was just so Joe can put forward Paxton Pomacall as a solution to all the USA's problems. But yeah, but, Mihalovic, Paxton Pomacall, you know, we've already seen Roldan in squads and so on, Eric Williamson. Yeah, I think there are names. It's just maybe about solidifying some of those names as the depth options behind the MMA midfield unit.
Graham, I know, or sorry, Joe, I know you didn't have him on your list. Do you think Christian Roldan is still on Greg Berhalter's list? If not a lock, then close to it?
I don't think he's a lock or close to a lock, but I do think he's on the list. I think there's every chance that he's involved in June. I don't know if that will be as a central midfielder or as a wider player. I guess it's not that much wider, but maybe in the half spaces on either the right side or the left side. But I do think he's someone that Berhalter clearly knows and trusts, and I think there's a chance we see him in June.
If we don't have a ton more about central midfield depth, because I don't, but I do think, Joe, that you're right to kind of point that one out. And we've long been concerned about what happens if Tyler Adams is injured or if he gets a yellow card or gets suspended. How do we kind of make up for that one? And I think you're right that with only kind of five lockdown central midfielders, there's always a chance someone's getting hurt or someone's going to miss a game. And then that depth kind of keeps plummeting. But we're talking about depth there. And Graham, it feels like that's a similar conversation we could have about fullback potentially. Fullback spelled with two words, mind you, of course.
Yeah, two words for fullback. No, absolutely. I think in terms of the first team positions, I don't think fullback area is an area, a specific area of much concern for the US, given that Dest and Jedi Robinson are probably going to be the first picks in those positions. And I think of all the things Berhalter has to look at in this camp and in the months leading up to Qatar, this is probably one of the ones I'd be least concerned about, but it is something that he's going to have to solidify in his squad before the World Cup, because beyond Destin Robinson, it's all a little bit fluid with some of the options. So just to run through some of those options, Reggie Cannon, Shaq Moore, DeAndre Yedlin, Joe Scally, Sam Vines, Justin Che, Christian Pulisic. Just kidding. Am I kidding about Pulisic? Who can tell anymore? But seriously, the US has some serious depth in the fullback areas. I don't think it's necessarily a problem. It's probably a good problem to have, actually. But it would be quite helpful if Berhalter was able to establish some order in the same way that I think he's established some order in other areas of the pitch, where you know that, okay, this player is not available, this player's got a suspension, or this player's got an injury, this player is coming in as their replacement. And I just don't think there is that in the fullback positions. Maybe this is the right time to finally integrate Joe Scally. I think obviously we have spoken about him previously, and maybe some of the hype around him is slightly over the top, but I think it's fair to say that there is a good player there with a lot of potential. In the past, he hasn't been called into the camps because he hasn't had that integration moment, and Shaq Moore comes in for the last window because he'd played in the Gold Cup and Scally hadn't had that experience before. And I do accept that Berhalter maybe didn't want to bring him in when the pressure was on in qualifying. I think that's pretty reasonable, but now the pressure is off and you've got these Nations League games and these friendlies, so maybe this is the perfect time to bring him in, and you maybe establish him as one of the depth options in the fullback areas.
Joe, I think previously when we talked about fullback depth, we had it as Graham said, it's Jedi on the left, it's Serginho Dest on the right. If we're looking at right-sided depth, it's some combination of DeAndre Yedlin and Reggie Cannon, and then, yeah, wandering in the wilderness is Joe Scally and other options there. What have you seen of DeAndre Yedlin this season with Miami, and do you feel like he is cementing his case to be in the squad, or is he undermining his own case to be in the squad going forward?
I don't think he's undermining it. Okay. Now, Miami are not a good team. They've gotten a little better after the really poor start they had this season under Phil Neville. And Yedlin is one of the better players on that team, I would say. He's aggressive moving down that right side. And I think overall he's been a positive force for this Miami team. He really is one of their key attacking options. And he really gets up and down that right side, which is exactly what Berhalter wants to see from his fullbacks. I think even if Yedlin was having a bad season, which he's not, to be clear, he'd still be in Qatar. His mixture of experience and his performances in some big games, I don't think he was great in the March window, but he got a lot of minutes in that stretch of games. I think his time under Berhalter mixed with his status as one of the veteran leaders of this group means that he will absolutely be in Qatar.
So we would assume Yedlin there. Maybe Reggie Cannon is there. Serginho Dest definitely there, so too Jedi. What about that left side, Joe, when it comes to the depth? We've talked about Sam Vines. We've talked about George Bello. It feels like maybe we're just going to have to continue to see both of them for club next season, but also for country if they both get opportunities, just to see who can kind of rise up the ranks a little bit, because right now it feels like it's Jedi Robinson and then a pretty sizable gap and then maybe George Bello.
Yeah, maybe. And this is one of those reasons why I'm really excited about the June camp, is because we don't have a lot of clarity about that left back spot after Jedi Robinson. It could be any one of the names we've mentioned. It could be somebody we haven't mentioned yet. Maybe Kevin Paredes gets a look. That would really surprise me. But maybe he comes on strong to start the next season with Wolfsburg. And he is maybe one, if not the only, one of the few players who's involved in September that hasn't really gotten much of a run with the U.S. in the past at the senior level. So there's just a big old question mark around this left back spot. And for the U.S., I kind of don't think it's going to matter a whole lot. Barring injury, Jedi Robinson's probably going to play every single minute at the World Cup because that's just what he does. But at the same time, he seems to be dealing with a little bit of a knee injury right now, if reports are to be believed. It doesn't sound like anything major, but there's a chance that somebody does need to step up, and that could be any number of different names.
I think maybe Berhalter views, and we've discussed this before, but I think he probably views Dest actually as the as the depth option on the left, which adds a different dynamic to this discussion, because then are you bringing two depth option right backs with that in mind, that Dest, if something happens to Jedi Robinson, and look, it's a World Cup, things can happen, he can get suspended, he can pick up an injury, then Dest moves over to the left and it's actually the right back position that shifts up and changes and one of those depth option comes in.
All right, let's say, what would have this happen? Okay, let's say it's Jedi Robinson gets hurt, and then we do have Dest sliding over to left back. Graham, does that make you more comfortable than, like, basically, is it Dest at left back and then, say, DeAndre Yedlin starting at right back? Are you more comfortable with that, or are you more comfortable with Dest staying at right back and, question mark, playing left back, be it George Bello or Sam Vines or somebody else? I feel like I'm answering it by saying I don't know who it would be.
Basically. Yeah, exactly. I was literally going to say, I think you've answered your own question there by saying question mark. Yes, that makes me much more comfortable with Yedlin at right back and Dest at left back.
So then this is basically, maybe this is one of those positions where instead of seeing a bunch of new faces, it's more about getting the reps and seeing how we can do. If it is maybe Jedi comes off at halftime in a friendly and then Dest goes to left back, how do we do with that sort of that switch mid-game? Maybe that's where it's more about experimentation than new faces.
Yeah, a lot of this camp, the term I would use is stress testing. So kind of envisaging certain scenarios, like you've just gamed out there, you know, Jedi Robinson picks up an injury, he has to come off, okay, we're going to have to do this now. We're going to have to change the shape of our midfield unit. We know we can't play a three, let's play a double pivot in there. Just kind of gaming out certain scenarios that could happen in a World Cup. Major tournaments are weird. Major tournaments are really weird in that it's very rare that you go into any game in a major tournament with your first choice team and everything's going to work perfectly and everything's going to go to plan. Things are going to go wrong either in the build up or in the game and you're going to have to react. And the thing about a World Cup, as I've said already in this show, you don't have much time to react. You know, games are 4 days apart. So there's not much recovery time. So I think it would be wise for Berhalter to kind of envisage some of those scenarios and just experiment in that way in this camp.
I like the idea of this being stress testing and figuring some things out. I also feel like the problem with these episodes as we do them is that we end up talking about all the little, like, minor problems and little issues that could pop up, and I get increasingly paranoid because I was about to ask you both, like, all right, let's talk about what's the thing that we're most confident about. But I think because we're all in the, like, nervous, concerned, what are the issues mindset, I might have struggled to say a thing that I'm confident about, and then that takes us down an entirely different path. So let's just avoid, like, I don't think there's any major issues that we haven't yet talked about. Oh, wait, we haven't discussed number nines yet. That's always fun. Joe, is that where we should head next, or are there other potential issues that you wanted to talk out first?
Let's do the nines. Right. I will provide just a momentary bit of positivity here. We are nitpicking, right?
That's what, Joe, let's do this. Give us some positivity. We'll take one more break, okay. Then we'll come back and
beautiful.
talk some number nines.
Beautiful. Positivity and sponsors. That's the two things that people love most. We're nitpicking here. This whole episode's about nitpicking, but there's a lot to like about this national team too. Defensively, really, really strong. I think that's something that they're going to rely on heavily in the World Cup. Now, there is nuance to that, and certainly that whole defensive approach could be improved with some goalkeeper tweaks, but we've already talked about that stuff, right? There are a lot of really exciting things about this group. They're the youngest team to qualify for the World Cup. The average age of players and minutes in World Cup qualifying certainly speaks to that. And that is true. That's been proven through the data. This is a really exciting team. So I think there's a lot to be excited about, a lot of talent. Hopefully that talent is on the field together and they're all healthy. We don't know exactly what that'll look like, but the sky is certainly not falling. And none of these issues should lead to us saying that the sky is falling, Taylor.
The sky is not falling. That's an optimistic note. Joe, I also appreciate you almost making me spit out my tea because I laughed so hard at your joke. Let's take that break to hear from today's sponsors, and then we'll be back to talk number nines.
Today's episode is brought to you by our old friends, Mack Weldon. Wouldn't it be nice if we could have things both ways, like a zero-calorie cheeseburger, internet ads in March that weren't just reminders to do your taxes, a dog that never needs walking after midnight when it's cold, a Manchester United that is consistently good instead of their current scattershot approach? Well, we tend to think of clothing as an either-or situation as well. People think looking sharp means starchy Oxfords and stiff chinos rather than effortless comfort. But it's possible to have it both ways. Mack Weldon makes timeless apparel with modern performance fabrics for guys who want to look and feel sharp without sacrificing comfort. From their light-as-air underwear to innovative anti-odor tees and versatile yet comfortable pants, Mack Weldon has a full range of clothes that never go out of style. I got a few things recently, including a long-sleeve polo, which I love, maybe the most comfortable t-shirt, which I also love, and my new favorite sweatpants, the Ace sweatpant. It's exactly what I described above, comfort and versatile, but still stylish. It's the type of sweatpant I can wear to pick up my kids from daycare and not think, I'm now wearing sweatpants in public. The other parents will judge me. Now I just think, judge away, nerds, because you will never be this comfortable unless you're also wearing a pair, in which case, high five. Mack Weldon is not flashy. It's just classic, always in style, and made from the world's most comfortable performance materials. They're designed to fit both your style and the demands of modern life. So get timeless looks with modern comfort from Mack Weldon. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code TSS. That's MackWeldon.com, promo code TSS to get 20% off your first order. Thank you to Mack Weldon for sponsoring today's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS.
Welcome back. When last we left you, Joe was making me almost spit out my tea. Joe, I'm going to refrain from drinking as we talk about number nines, although
there's a potential that this topic of conversation will have me wanting to drink something slightly harder. Joe, take us through the number nine situation, if you would.
Is there any
Just real quick.
Is there any rule that says the TSS host has to be drinking tea at all times? Because I'm guessing Ryan's downing it every other, you know, every other show that he's doing, one glass in each hand. And Taylor, now you're drinking tea. This is some sort of tea conspiracy. I'm hosting
not,
later this week,
Joe,
and I will
not
be
read
drinking
your contract?
Tea.
I feel like you have not read your contract.
I refuse.
In there, and I'm a little bit concerned now that your lack of tea consumption is hurting the show.
I'm an American. I like American beverages. Yeah.
You couldn't even think of one, could you?
No,
you couldn't even think of one.
Anyway, let's talk
Gatorade.
About something I do know more about. Yeah, Gatorade.
Just Gatorade.
That is like the most American beverage, and the fact that it's so linked to college athletics is just beyond fitting. Anyway, let's talk about something I know more about than the Florida Gators or Gatorade or tea. It's who's going to be getting looks at the nine. Now, I don't actually know the answer to that question, but I do know it's a question, and I should get a point for that. This is still a question mark around this team. It has been for who knows how long. We've talked about it a lot. And so I'm not going to go into a ton of depth here other
we'll
than to say.
We'll never escape this cycle. Yeah. This is our hell.
Yes, this is it. This and goalkeeper really are brutal. We've already learned from Berhalter that Haji Wright is coming in, or at least it sounds like that's absolutely going to be the case. He's doing well in Turkey right now. We've talked about him on the show. I think he's worth a look. It sounds like there might be someone else coming in by the name of Malik Tillman, who is a dual national that Berhalter referenced, and we had to connect the dots a little bit there, and some folks on Twitter are doing the same. But Malik Tillman's a German-American dual national. He's a forward. He sounds like he could be getting a look in June. Ricardo Pepi probably not coming in, based on Berhalter's comments about giving him a little bit of a mental break and just a break from the grind that he's been on, going from MLS, playing a bunch of World Cup qualifying games, moving over to Germany, and really starting a whole new life there in a completely different country. I do think that's understandable, especially because Pepi hasn't been doing all that well at Augsburg, so it's not like he's breaking down Berhalter's door to get involved. So more questions about this group than maybe ever before, but I do like that it sounds like we're seeing some different options get into this group. Maybe someone like Brandon Vasquez could get involved as well. I would like to see him, although if Wright and Tillman are both going to be involved, it sounds like there might not be room for a whole bunch of other nines. I'd expect Jesus Ferreira would be involved as long as he's healthy coming off of some games with Dallas. I expect he'll be involved in this group as well. But we're going to see different players at the nine, and I do appreciate that because it seems like Berhalter is certainly trying to answer this question of who's going to be this team's number nine.
I'm interested and excited to see what Haji Wright does because he seems to have risen quite late in this discussion. I think if you are scoring goals as he is in Turkey, then you automatically kind of become part of this discussion as Jordan Pefok has done in Switzerland with his goal scoring record. And we looked at Wright's strengths and weaknesses as a player a few weeks ago, and there's certainly plenty to like there. I like how effective he is at hold up play. He is asked to do that a lot at club level. That could be quite useful for the USMNT. He might not have a lightning turn of pace, but there's a lot of intent to his play. Once you get into the penalty box, it feels like he is very much determined to score a goal, which I know sounds kind of simplistic, but a lot of strikers maybe don't have that. And then, as I say, of course, there's a scoring record. He's got 13 Turkish Super League goals this season, including 8 in his last 6 games. And in that sort of form, I don't think you can really ignore him at the moment. So I am looking forward to seeing what he does with the game time. If he gets game time, if he's in the camp, you would assume he's going to get an opportunity to play. And as I say, I'm excited to see that.
With Malik Tillman, and I want to come back to Haji Wright in a little bit, but I want to start with Malik Tillman. We're talking about a 19-year-old who's a dual national. He's played for the US U15s, but then since then has basically only played for Germany at youth levels. Joe, we've been in this situation sort of before when it came to Julian Green. If we had Malik Tillman come in and maybe he plays both those friendlies and he gets a goal against Morocco and a goal against Uruguay, are you comfortable? Like, would you be okay if Berhalter basically said, like, okay, he's scoring goals, he fits our system exactly, he's what we've been missing, it's worth guaranteeing him a spot on the World Cup roster to sort of jump from Germany and officially declare to play for the United States? Like, is that the downside of experimenting this late in the game, is that a striker who catches a good run of form for a couple games can really push himself up there, like we saw with Ricardo Pepi, but then you don't know what's going to happen next? So, like, how comfortable would you be with Malik Tillman coming in, starting games, and potentially being that number nine?
If he looks good, I'm super comfortable with it. That's the question, right? I don't have any issue with Berhalter continuing to experiment. And whether or not that experiment involves Malik Tillman doesn't really matter a whole lot to me. But if Tillman or someone else comes in and starts banging in goals, and maybe even beyond that, is doing the sustainable, good forward kind of stuff. They're moving off the ball well. They're getting into the box. They're arriving at the right time. They're getting good shooting opportunities. Even if the ball's not always going into the back of the net, if they're doing those repeatable actions that good goal scorers do, I'm great with someone like that getting more looks. And maybe that's Malik Tillman. And if he comes in and dominates in this June window, or maybe doesn't dominate, that's probably too high of a bar for any nine in this pool. If he comes in and looks good or competent and shows a lot of nice things, I would have no issue with him being involved again in September and going to the World Cup. Do I think that's particularly likely? No, not really. But honestly, at this point, who knows? It could be Tillman. It could be Wright. It could be Vasquez. It could be Josh Sargent coming back from the English grave that he's found himself in Norwich. I don't know what that's going to look like, but I'd be lying if I said I wasn't curious about Tillman. Berhalter obviously sees something, and if this is a way to get a competent nine into this group and to also secure a dual national and get him involved and excited about being in this U.S. group, it's kind of a win-win.
Graham, part of the reason, as I've said previously, why I love having you on the show is so when Joe and I start to get overly anxious about, like, who might be the center back depth, you can kind of slap us on the head and remind us that we've qualified for the World Cup and things aren't that bleak. Is the number nine spot a similar thing where is there a chance that, like, there is just a player like Jesus Ferreira, just put him in there and it'll be okay enough? Or is this actually an issue to your mind?
No, I kind of lean more to the former. Obviously, it is interesting because number nine is, every position is important, but the number nine is the spearhead of any football team. So it's interesting to discuss who's going to play there for the US MNT at the World Cup. But I do think the US has options and pretty good options. I mean, if Jesus Ferreira starts those three group games at the World Cup, I don't think that's much of a problem. I think he's proved that he can do a good job. I also think the wide forwards that the US have as well are good enough that they can maybe, if Jesus Ferreira isn't scoring many goals, I think Pulisic, if he's in form, and Tim Weah, or if it's Gio Reyna out on that right side, I think those players are good enough that as a unit, that front three is strong. So I personally, think that the centre-back issue right now has become the biggest, the most pressing issue for the US. That's the one in this camp, I think. Berhalter needs to find a solution for that because that feels very important. It's the basis of a team, particularly at a major tournament where it feels like international teams, or at least the good international teams, have solid defences. And the US had that with Robinson and Zimmerman. I think that's the most pressing issue right now is resolving that. With the number nine, I know I'm slightly contradicting myself because I previously said September is too late to experiment. As long as you're not bringing in someone completely fresh, I don't think you would bring in Tillman for the September window. But if Berhalter is still chopping and changing with PFOC and Pepe, if he's back in the roster, or Ferreira in that window, I don't think that's much of an issue because I think all of those players kind of have their own qualities and bring something different to the table. So I don't think I'm as concerned by it. Obviously, it would be brilliant if the US had a Lewandowski or a Benzema or a Haaland, but they don't, and I still think they actually have a pretty strong attack.
Graham, like, what would be... this is another one that may end up being a very obvious question, and I'm going to say up front that the answer is probably just, yeah, scoring goals. Now here's the question. I do wonder if some of the number nine issue is that Berhalter is asking a lot of that role and that they're being asked to do different things at different times, and it can be a lot to process, a lot to keep in your head. But what is the thing that you, like, if there were somebody who came in and just, like, did cement that spot as being theirs. They basically staked their claim, backed it up, and they did kind of rise to that occasion, became that number nine. What is the thing that they're doing best? Because I wonder if, like, we have a person who comes in and, like, yeah, he scored a goal, but he didn't really link up play really well. This guy linked up play really well and everybody else scored, but he didn't get any shots off. Like, I do kind of feel a little bit confused because we've seen so many different players play that position. All of them successfully at times, unsuccessfully at others. I don't quite know what would be the obvious thing that would make me happy, and I feel like the answer is just, yeah, if he scores goals, whatever, get him in there.
Yeah, as a goal scorer, isn't it? If someone who scores consistent goals, I mean, if a striker have had you right in this window, how many games are there? Four games, two friendlies and two Nations League games. I think it's unlikely he's going to start all four of those games, but let's just say for argument's sake he does, and he scores in all four games, and all of a sudden he becomes pretty much a lock for the World Cup, assuming he continues his form and at club level and remains fit.
So yes, it's goals. I know that's a very simplistic answer. I think everyone wants Karim Benzema as a centre forward, someone who not only scores goals but links up play and things are conducted through him. And it feels like Berhalter is maybe that's the player he's looking for, not Benzema, but someone who is not just there to penalty box poach and finish chances in the 6-yard box. Because I feel like the US maybe have some good options to do that. Jordan Pefok, I would even put forward. Christian Ramirez is a pretty good poacher. It seems like he's heading back to MLS this summer from Aberdeen in Scotland. The US have good options there. It's just they don't have that all-rounder who, as you say, Berhalter does demand a lot of that number nine. Jesus Ferreira is good at some stuff, not so good at other things. Pefok's good at some stuff, not so good at other things. So, but as I say, it feels like when you take that attack as a unit and you look at the balance of all the players together, which I guess is the most important thing when you're looking at a team, I still see a strong unit for the US and not too much to be concerned about.
I want to try to add a little bit more context to that question before it comes away as, Graham, do you think it's important for number nines to score goals? I think... What I'm struggling with is the idea that, like, it's been so long since we had a person who just was that goal scorer, who was that number nine. I would go back to, like, maybe, like, before Josh Sargent even got his first call-up is when it felt like, oh, it's going to be Josh Sargent. We know that for sure. And it's just been such an area of uncertainty for so long that at this point I have a hard time imagining anybody being able to come in and just being like, wow, they did everything they needed to do. That's the guy. It seems like we're going to have a bit of a trade-off somewhere. And maybe that is, yeah. If it's Haji Wright, a person who can facilitate play, isn't maybe quite as technical, doesn't have that elite speed, but has proven he can score poacher goals and can score lasers from 30 yards out, and that's enough. Score the goals, link up play as best you can. You don't have to be that kind of elite speed in behind. Do a couple of those things really well, and that will make you stand out rather than doing a bunch of things okay.
Can I settle some nerves, I think, regarding this issue and the World Cup? If you go through the... How many teams at the World Cup? 32. That's right, isn't it?
Yep.
If you go through those 32 teams at the World Cup, I think you could probably count on maybe the 5 to 10 teams. You count it on two hands, but certainly not any more than two hands. You could count on two hands the number of teams that have a reliable goal-scoring number nine that is an absolute lock of that position and there's absolutely no concerns about. Those players are very, very rare and hard to come by, and it certainly seems like they're hard to come by at international level. And if you can find that player, then yes, it elevates your level a lot. But I don't feel like the US are going to... I mean, if the US come up against Scotland, I quite like Che Adams as our number nine, but he's not Robert Lewandowski. He's not hitting 20 goals a season for Southampton, so we don't have that player, and I think you'll find many other countries don't have that player.
Yeah, I mean, I would assume that it would be Lyndon Dykes for you, all right? That's the proven number nine that you're feeling confident with?
I like Lyndon Dykes, but again, not a 20-goal-a-season striker.
No?
I mean, part of the reason I like him is he's Australian, and Australians are good fun.
There you go.
But yeah, Che Adams actually would be pretty good for the USMNT. I've thought this before. Like, he is a decent goal scorer at Premier League level and links up the rest of play. But as I say, he's not a 20-goal-a-season striker.
Graham, quick question. What if I only have two fingers on each hand? How does that impact the number nine World Cup hand exercise?
That's going to be difficult, yeah.
Okay.
You might need to borrow some other hands. If you're giving Gio Reyna a hamstring, he might give you a hand back.
That's true. He doesn't need him. He doesn't play American football. He just plays the actual football. I'm with it, Graham.
Man, it is crazy how few, like, out-and-out number nines there are and how many of them seem to play for France at the same time. France is going to have an okay World Cup, I would assume, which means they're probably going to crash out in the group stage. Joe, Graham saying that he feels comfortable in the rest of the attack, even if the number nine issue remains a little bit of an issue. Are you feeling that same level of confidence, or do you have some concerns about the USA's attack in general?
I'm confident about the individuals on the wings, because I think that's the only real piece left. And I guess you add in the fullbacks and some of the contributions from the eights. But really, thinking about the wingers, I'm confident in those players. If everybody's healthy, and that's a big if at this point, but if Gio Reyna and Christian Pulisic and Brendan Aaronson and Tim Weah and even Paul Areola and maybe Jordan Morris, whoever's in that group, I'm confident in those players' ability to go to work and press and be aggressive and drive the ball downfield and create some chances on their own. I am not all that confident yet about this team's ability to attack as a unit. And this is connected to the nine. It's connected to the midfield conversation. This is sort of an all-encompassing concern because you attack as a team. That's how soccer works. The U.S. generated the most XG of any team in World Cup qualifying, which is great. They were on top of that list. They were the best team by the underlying numbers in World Cup qualifying.
Wait, and just to be clear, is that in CONCACAF World Cup
in
qualifying?
In CONCACAF World Cup qualifying,
okay,
yes.
Cool.
Sorry,
like in all
very
World
good.
Cup qualifying?
Very
right,
good clarification,
face,
Taylor. Thank you. That was very clutch of you. Yeah, you saved some tweets there. Thank you. Most in CONCACAF, which is great. They were, by the numbers, the best team in CONCACAF during World Cup qualifying. But for those of us that watched a bunch of those games and watched them again and again, Taylor, you and I saw this, and Graham, I'm sure from what you watched, you saw this too. The U.S. struggled for stretches of qualifying, and they struggled too often, for my liking, with the talent advantage that they have. Think back to the Canada home game in Nashville, where they really struggled to break through that block. Think back to a number of the road games in CONCACAF, and I know those are difficult, but still, the U.S. didn't perform up to their level and up to the level of talent that they have. So I want to see in June, and certainly in September, as the World Cup gets closer and closer, I want to see more from this group. I want to see the best players on the field together, and I don't know if that's going to be possible. It doesn't sound like Gio Reyna is going to be involved, and that sucks for this team because I think he is their best player, just straight up. But I want to see whoever's involved get reps together, get the best players on the field. Yeah, experiment some too, but these guys need reps. And so that's a question mark for me, is how much are these players, the top guys, going to play together? And will we see a more cohesive attack in this June window, and certainly as we look forward to September as well?
It is strange to me that we haven't seen more cohesion from this US attacking group, because sometimes you look at an attack, and sorry, Taylor, to pick on your team, but Manchester United, you look at their attack right now and you can kind of go, okay, I can see why that's maybe not working so great at the moment. There doesn't seem to be the balance there. But when you look at the US roster and the attacking options that they have...
Sorry to keep interrupting, everybody. I just have to believe that somebody at Man United's ears perked up. Like, wait, what? There's solutions? What are you talking about? How do you solve these things?
We can fix this?
No, we better buy 8 more guys that won't fit the system. Yeah. That should solve it.
Yeah, anyway. We need another forward who's not going to press, and then we'll play a pressing style. Anyway, yeah, when you look at the US M&T options, I actually do see some good balance. At Tim Weah, I like him on the right side for the way that he stretches the pitch and provides some verticality. But then on the left side, when Pulisic is starting there, you have Pulisic kind of cutting inside, creating space for Anthony Robinson on the overlap. You have Ferreira dropping deep to create the space for Pulisic and Weah to spin in behind. So in terms of the balance of that group, I think that's what I meant when I say I'm not too concerned about that attacking unit, because I see strength in players in other areas and potential balance as well and cohesion in that attack. But Joe, you're absolutely right. In some of the performances that they have put up in qualifying, it didn't quite click. And I think that might be a slight concern.
And a lot of it in my mind also has to do with injuries, because it feels like we just aren't keeping people on the pitch at the same time. And yeah, Joe, to your point, we're probably not going to have Gio Reyna again, or I'd be shocked if we did, but that's a player we haven't had since what, September? And then you have Timothy Weah gets injured, Christian Pulisic has injuries, and then doesn't get as many reps with Chelsea, and I think in certain games is maybe trying to prove too much. And maybe this is good preparation for the World Cup when there are going to be injuries and you have to kind of figure things out on the fly. But it's the position group that I have sort of the most confidence in, because there's so much talent and depth there and just proven established veterans that even if it comes down to it, like Paul Areola has proven that he can play there for the United States and knows what Berhalter wants of him. But ahead of him, I think we've got Aronson, there's Weah, there's Pulisic, there's Reyna, and there's other potential names in there too. It's just to get everybody playing together in meaningful minutes that allow you to kind of keep building that chemistry and consistency. That's just been such... not a problem. It just hasn't happened so far. And a few games, I think, a few more reps together, I have to believe that makes that attack just a bit more fluid. It connects them more. They understand each other a little bit more. Their communication is better. They know how they play. They know where the runs are going to be. And that would be my hope, is that with a few more reps and a little bit better health, we get a better attacking output overall.
Yeah, that's my hope too, Taylor. And it's challenging. I think you're very wise to point out the injury issues. That's a huge part of why this team has looked choppy at times in attack and why it hasn't all come together. It's going to be extremely difficult, but I think important for Berhalter to balance getting players reps, like we've talked about, getting the key guys reps, whichever of those guys are here, balancing that idea with also experimenting. Because there does need to be some experimenting. Center back, we talked about it. Maybe a little bit at left back or at the fullback spots. Central midfield as well, I think, is going to be an area where you have to tweak things. And same with the nine spot. But how do you do that? How do you rotate from game to game in this stretch of four matches? How do you balance who's on the field together? Is it a platoon type approach? Is it an incremental rotation? I don't know what that looks like. That's a big challenge for Berhalter, but I think he needs to get it right in June. And weirdly, yeah. Sorry, real quick. I don't even exactly know what getting it right looks like. I'm not sure any of us do, but maybe Berhalter does. It's a big maybe though.
Yeah, and that's the underlying question ahead of this upcoming camp, right? Is how much experimentation is too much experimentation? You and I think this is a particularly pertinent point with Berhalter, who's made such an effort to create the right environment. There have been some selection decisions he's made that haven't been based exactly on individual quality of a player, but instead on how they will fit into the locker room and into the structure of the team. So he clearly values that stuff. So at this point, when you're, what is it, 5-6 months out from the World Cup, do you want to be messing with that formula too much? But equally, you want to, as I said to you, Taylor, a little while ago, you want to game out some scenarios so that you're not short of any options when you get to the World Cup, so that if something happens in the World Cup, you aren't left high and dry without a plan B. You want to create some of that depth as well to your tactical structure. So it's a difficult balancing act, and I think the only correct answer and the only right way to do it is not to veer too much in either direction. So don't just play the team that you know is going to work for certain, but equally, don't just put a team on the pitch that isn't really selected with any scenario in mind, and everyone's looking around at each other going, what is this proving and what is this testing in ahead of the World Cup? So you still need that structure, I think.
Don't be Bielsa at Leeds and play the same players and kind of run them into the ground, but also don't be Manchester United and just throw stuff at a wall and see what
sticks.
Try to find the balance, maybe, would be good. Then, final question for you both, or final couple questions. If we are okay with a little bit of experimentation, I agree with Graham, I don't think we want to have an entirely new starting 11 and see what happens, because then you're not getting a realistic depiction of that team. If you want to see who can deputize for Tyler Adams, you've got to have roughly that first choice team there, and then a replacement for Tyler Adams and see what works. And I don't think we have the luxury of trying that at every single position. It seems like the three spots that we're most okay with seeing a little bit of experimentation would be at number 9, would be at center back in place of Miles Robinson, and then potentially at goalkeeper. So I will ask you both, who would you like to see? Not who do you think we will see, but who would you most like to see start in each of those positions, injuries permitting, against Morocco and Uruguay, those first two friendlies? Joe, I will come to you first, unless you would like me to answer and buy you some time.
No, you're good. So give me one position at a time, just so I don't forget them, because I will.
Let's start with goalkeeper.
I'd like to see Matt Turner get a real run. I don't have a strong desire to see anybody else. Maybe Ethan Horvath, Gaga Slanina could be in there. I'm not as much on the Stefan Fry train as everybody else is, but it's Matt Turner for me.
All right, so Joe got that one wrong. Graham, what about you?
This is where I have to balance my curiosity and the fact that I don't really have a horse in this race. So I kind of want to see Stefan Fry just because I think it'd be interesting and give us something to talk about. But maybe the right answer is Matt Turner. And as Joe says, you just give him a run of games, given that he's already been... There's less of a risk with him, I think. So I'm going... Despite the fact I really want to say Fry, I'm going to say Turner.
That was -1 point to Joe for saying Matt Turner. That was -2 points to Graham. Damn. For correctly reasoning
let's
it and then still choosing
go,
Matt Turner, even though
baby.
That is probably the correct answer. Joe, let's go to center back. Who would you like to see starting at center back? We would assume alongside Walker Zimmerman.
I'd like to see Richards get a game. Graham, I think you're totally right that he is probably the best of the center back options. I mean, I'm still really high on him as a player. He's the best of the Robinson replacements. Different, but I think the best overall. I'd like to see Richards get a game or two, and I'd like to see CCV get at least one game. And then maybe we'll see how those games have gone before Berhalter decides what that fourth lineup is going to look like.
Graham, for you?
Yeah, I'm going to let curiosity get the better of me on this one. It has to be CCV. I've spoken too much about it this year for me not to get some proper evidence on how it would work. So yes, please, CCV in the team.
CCV at right back, Tim Ream at right center back, Tim Ream at left center back. There we go. That's what
is
I want.
Is that four
to see.
Words or eight
will.
Words or how many words is that?
It's been a show in which I revealed that I am occasionally not smart. Let's talk number 9 before we call it quits. Joe, who would you most like to see given a start at number 9 in those friendlies?
Taylor, I said hamstrung did. So if anybody's proved their ignorance on that show, it's not you. It's me. I don't know about the nine, man. Hanji, right? I'd like to get a game. Tillman, if he's playing well in camp, I wouldn't be mad at getting a game if he truly is involved. Yeah. And really, though, I guess my overall answer, and this is the player that I think I'm the highest on in this spot in general, is Jesus Ferreira. Not somebody we've talked about much, but if someone's going to be getting the lion's share of the minutes, I would lean towards Ferreira and basically just give him a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and say, you've had some good moments in qualifying, but we also want to get an extended look at you, just like we'd be curious to get an extended look at a whole bunch of these guys. Ferreira, for me, though, just has a slight leg up on some of those other options.
Graham?
Yeah, I agree with Joe completely in that. I think you give Ferreira a good run. You at least give him two of the four games, I think, starting, and then maybe you give Hadji Wright one start, and I still feel like I want to see a little bit more from PFOC. I know he's had opportunities, and I know he hasn't played that well for the USMNT before, but equally on the flip side of that, I feel like he hasn't been given a proper chance yet. So I think maybe PFOC, Wright, and Ferreira would be the three that I would lean towards.
I think that you all have done an excellent job with this one, because I really like the idea of, let's say you give Ferreira like that Morocco game, then maybe you try Hadji Wright in a friendly against Uruguay, then Ferreira starts against Grenada, and then the final game at El Salvador, maybe that's where PFOC gets a start, and that's the El Salvador game on the road that the U.S. drew 0-0 to open qualifying. We would assume that they will be expansive at times, but defensive at times, and maybe that's where Jordan PFOC can come in and show that, like, he can get the job done when it's required, and maybe that balances it really well. So I like the idea of experimentation at that number nine spot in those four games. But Joe, I think a thing that you pointed out there was really quickly, but I think very important, and I'm glad you did, was about camp and the idea of these guys coming into camp first, which again feels very obvious, but I think so much of what Berhalter is asking of these players is executed or not executed in camp. And I think that is the initial bar for so many of these players, is when you're brought in, I'm going to put you into a small-sided game or an 11v11 or whatever it may be, and I'm going to ask you to do certain things. How quickly do you process that information and put it into play? How much are you able to listen to what instruction I'm giving you on the fly? How much do you respond to your teammates and read the game? And I think so much of these games, these games are important, but so much of it will be about the camp and how players rise to the occasion. And so if we do see Hadji Wright getting a start, to me, that means he has shown, at the very least, he has cleared that first hurdle of, he showed in camp he can do it, let's see what he does in an actual game. If we don't see any of them, but they're all called into camp, I think we have equally an answer about where they fit into the system. And if it is Jesus Ferreira starting all four games, then again, I think we've got some answers coming out of that one. So ultimately, it seems like these friendlies and those Nations League games will go a long way towards giving us even more clarity about a team on which we already have a decent amount of clarity. So I started off anxious. I'm feeling more confident at the end of this show, and that is always a positive, and not just convenient, because it is time to end this episode. anything else to add, Graham Ruthven, overall about the U.S. or any specific positions or anything else?
I just think it's really interesting how much emphasis is put on the camp environment with the U.S., because I don't see that really in other national teams, certainly ones that I follow. It's certainly not the case with Scotland. I mean, our players barely talk to each other, not because they don't like each other, but because we're Scottish. It's just a strange... It's not strange, it's actually a good thing, but it's a unique thing about the USMNT that I find interesting.
It's one of my favorite things, because I've heard players who have been in the camps who are just like U.S. internationals talk about it, but I've also heard dual nationals talk about how much more fun and welcoming it is, how like there are, I think, national teams where you have such high profile players that there is that, like, I'm coming in to do that job, and then I've got to go meet this branding opportunity and this marketing thing, and then I'm back to my club team who didn't want me to leave in the first place. And by all accounts, the U.S. is just a bit more of a fun atmosphere than you get elsewhere, and I think that goes a long way towards convincing some dual nationals that, like, if I'm going to spend a bunch of time with a bunch of guys, maybe it's going to be the one where we're having cookouts and listening to music after games. So I think that's where I really value
buffalo sauce. That's right. If you're using buffalo sauce at a cookout, you are doing it so wrong.
Joe, I don't even know what to say to you, because you can grill chicken wings and you can put buffalo sauce on those chicken wings. And then, Joe, I would say that you have something delicious cooking up instead of whatever you would prefer. Joe, what do you put? Are you putting barbecue sauce?
Yeah,
are you just putting
barbecue
sauce?
Dry rub is fun. Hold up. Sorry. Okay. Do you not like barbecue sauce? Because that's the second passive aggressive barbecue sauce comment I've heard you make.
No, it's just an easy way to disparage your taste by making fun of you as though you only eat like
sugary. You live in Virginia, Taylor. I guess you guys do do you do the vinegary kind of down south sauce?
No, we do tomato. I prefer the vinegary.
Oh, well, okay. It's fine. Vinegary is fine, but
yeah.
I'm genuinely having chicken wings for my dinner tonight, and normally I like buffalo sauce, but normally buffalo sauce wouldn't be my go-to, but I'm going to order buffalo sauce on my wings, Joe, I'm going to send you a picture of them.
Do it. You won't. Just to spite me. Do it.
Here's where I think we can all agree, I hope. Tomato, like sauce, like as the base sauce for barbecue sauce is fine.
Yeah.
Vinegar as the base sauce, fine. Dry rub also works. Mustard is ridiculous. Get out of here, South Carolina. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah.
That is my overall takeaway on barbecue sauces, South Carolina. I look forward to your letters. Joe Lowry, I look forward to talking to you again this week about the soccers and next week about the U.S. Men's national team. But you're going to be talking women's soccer later this week.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Ariana Cascon, who writes for Backheeled, which, Taylor, you were kind enough to mention earlier on in this show. She and I are going to be on the show. It'll be out on Thursday. We're talking Challenge Cup, which wrapped up over the weekend. We're going to be talking the early stages of the NWSL regular season as well. There'll be some US WNT kinds of questions in there about how those players who are on the US roster are faring in NWSL. We'll talk about teams that are impressing, expansion teams, all that good stuff will be out on Thursday.
So that'll be Thursday. Graham Lister questions Wednesday. Are you prepared for whatever random nonsense Ryan Bailey has found for us?
I mean, I'm never prepared, but I will try and handle it best I can.
I always look forward to the weekly segment, the Graham bonus questions.
So
I'm not going to say what it is if we have one, but I'm going to try to open the document really quickly and see if we do, unless either of you knows for sure that we do.
I don't know if there's Graham bonus content. There's Joe bonus content and in general TSS hybrid TV bonus content, which I am so excited for. Guys, I read through the doc earlier today and it's going to be great. I can't wait.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah, we're going to come back with some sauces. I'm excited for that one. But until then, Joe Lowry, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Taylor.
Graham Ruthven, thank you for being here as well, my friend.
Thank you, Taylor Rockwell.
And Taylor Rockwell, thank you for being here as well. You're welcome. Listeners, thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you all again very soon.